Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African American books and gifts full of cultural diversity. The total African American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com. Malik Books is what
you need. Today, let's talk politics with national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine and CNN political contributor Joan Walsh. Her brilliant and illuminating best-selling book of 2012, What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America, is even more relevant right about now in 2022. I am pleased to welcome Joan Walsh to this program. Joan, it's been far too long. How are you today?
Tavis, I'm great. It has been far too long. It's wonderful to be back with you.
It's good to have you back and hear your voice again on radio and on this station, KBLA. So thank you for the time. Glad we got an hour. A whole lot to unpack this day. I had stuff already on my mind over the weekend. Then you wake up this morning and you see what's happening in China. Let's start there. We'll start international and work our way back stateside. I've been to China many times. I don't know if you have, but I've been there many times. And one of the things that strikes you when you go to China is that there are cameras everywhere. I mean, literally everywhere you look, you are on camera in the Republic of China. I say that because when Chinese people then decide to protest, when they've had so much and they can't take it anymore, and they decide to protest, they're really putting their lives on the line because the cameras, again, are everywhere watching your every move. So when you see these kinds of eruptions, this kind of protest in China, it makes a huge statement to me. How are you reading the protests in the streets of China that the government is trying to crack down on now?
Well, I haven't been to China, unfortunately, but I, you know, from a distance, I can certainly say, though it's about the very draconian COVID lockdowns that they live under regularly, because that's the way the government deals with the pandemic. It's about more than that, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's about being driven to the breaking point by, you know, injustice, scarcity, corruption, and everything else. There was a big apartment fire, and people are protesting the living conditions that led to that. It's really one thing to be locked down in a lovely apartment like I was, mm-hmm. but it's very different when you're in unsafe conditions and grim conditions. So, it's about a lot more. It's incredibly brave, and, we'll see where it goes and whether they can sustain it. Yep. I certainly hope so.
No, it is incredibly, incredibly brave, and that was the point I was trying to make earlier by suggesting that, again, when you protest here, and let me be clear, we crack down on protest here too, unless you're white and unless you're white and you're male and you storm the Capitol on January the 6th. Other than that, we crack down on protest even here. Ask those who are participants in Black Lives Matter protests. You'll hear stories about the ways our government pushes back against protest even in the U.S. of A. But in China, it's a very, very different thing, as you all know. And so to Joan's point, it is in fact very brave. I guess the question is, before I move on, is what you think this does, or how this might infuse the conversation about democracy, because that's what they want. They want to live in a democratic state. Many of them do. Most of them, I suspect, do. And they've had enough of this. But it does, again, raise the conversation. Not that we are perfect, but it raises conversations about human rights violations. It raises conversations about democracy and whether or not it can take hold in a place like China. Your thoughts, Joan?
Well, I think it's a really tough situation for Joe Biden, just, after he took some steps to cool down tensions and try to make China a partner on a lot of issues, climate mm-hmm. change, energy, and as well as the war in Ukraine. So, I have questions about how hard he will push back on what he's seeing. If it reaches some kind of, breaking point, I can't even see that. I don't have the imagination to believe that people will survive the kinds of crackdowns that they impose there, Tavis. But if it does, that might change certainly the moral equation, if not the geopolitical equation.
Yeah. They are cracking down. Turn on your television, turn on your radio, everywhere you look and turn these days. It is the trending international story right now. They are cracking down literally on protests in the streets of China. That has a huge impact for our relations with China. As you heard Jones say a moment ago, we'll see what President Biden does. He's been trying to tamp down and cool down relations with China after the outrageous comments by Donald Trump during his presidency about China. So President Biden's been trying to cool that down. But now that they're cracking down on protesters, exercising their right to be heard, it puts the president in a difficult spot, puts our country in a difficult situation. We will see what happens in the next hours, in the coming days. But again, they are cracking down as we speak on people taking to the streets, protesting in China. I don't care where you are in the world. You can't hold people back forever. You can't hold them back. You can't hold them down forever. Eventually, that comes out in some way, shape, or form. We see now the Chinese people raising up and trying to express themselves. Reminds me of Tiananmen Square. For those who've been around long enough, you recall Tiananmen Square and those tanks that rolled down the street and those Chinese students who laid their bodies down in the streets right in front of those tanks and dared those tanks to run over them. Talk about brave. And so we're seeing a bit more of that today in the Republic of China. Let's move from international stories to domestic stories. When we come forward with our guest, Joan Walsh, we'll go straight to Georgia. The Georgia Supreme Court, as you probably heard over the weekend, allowed early voting to begin. So on Saturday, they started going to the polls in Georgia in that race that everybody's talking about and watching between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker for the U.S. Senate. We'll talk to Joan about that and a great deal more as we move through this first hour of Tavis Smiley on KBLA Talk 1580.
Interrogating your assumptions
and expanding your inventory of ideas.
Let's get back to Tavis Smiley on KBLA Talk 1580.
Our guest in this hour is national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine and CNN political contributor Joan Walsh. Pleased to have her in this first hour. Joan, let's go straight to Georgia. Supreme Court over the weekend, as you know, allowed early voting post the Thanksgiving holiday. A big debate in the state of Georgia. I'm not sure why it should have been, but it was. And thankfully for voters, I think in that state, the Supreme Court there made the right decision to allow early voting to begin. Let me start by asking what you make of the debate that they had about early voting in Georgia, and then we'll go into the campaign itself.
Well, it's a shameful debate, Tavis, because it was clear that the Secretary of State had the authority to say Saturday voting was okay. And the reason he didn't was that it came after what was basically the Robert E. Lee holiday. They they renamed it in 2015. They renamed it a state holiday. They took out the Confederate leader's name, but everybody knows what it means. So it was so anti-democracy and racist to rule that way in the first place. It was unnecessary because, not to bore everyone, but the language of the law does not make any reference to runoffs. So it doesn't necessarily apply to runoffs. Brad Raffensperger had so much latitude to say, yes, let's go ahead with early voting. And then when the Supreme Court ruled in favor of basically the Democrats in the situation, the RNC, the Republican Mitch McConnell's group, several Republican groups appealed it. Luckily, they were unsuccessful. But what does that mean? They are so blatantly trying to, A, defend the sanctity of the Robert E. Lee holiday. I'm not going to call it anything else. And B, disenfranchise black voters. That would mean that there would be no Saturday voting at all. They already truncated the runoff period. It's a tough sprint for both sides. But Democrats sometimes have a harder time getting to the polls. But Saturday voting made a huge difference. They had incredible turnout on Saturday. It was just really wonderful to see that people stood up and took advantage of what was their right. Unfortunately, people chose to stand in them. There were long lines in the Atlanta suburbs and in Atlanta. But people stayed in line and they voted. And, that's just a great sign for democracy, but also I think a great sign for Senator Warnock.
Yeah. I am not naive in saying this, but let me say it anyway. Every time I see a story like this, Joan, and I'm curious to get your take on it, let me tell you my take first. Every time I see a story like this, it actually tickles me, because from time to time you have the GOP, offering lip service to black voters, Trump being chief among them of late, but offering lip service and suggesting that, you know, they are a party that's big enough to consider African-American concerns and that Democrats, black folks should get off the Democratic plantation, all the language we've heard for years. But they make these, you know, empty bankrupt sort of appeals here and there to black voters. Donald Trump, again, did it a lot when he was president. And here now in Georgia, you have a black man running for the United States Senate against another black man, of course, named Raphael Warnock. But you got two black men running for the U.S. Senate. And here's an opportunity to engage and involve more people in the process. And as you said very clearly and very correctly, it's really about voter disenfranchisement, particularly and especially for African-American voters in the state of Georgia, even as they have a black candidate on the ballot running for the U.S. Senate. It just never ceases to amaze me that even when they have an opportunity to make an appeal to black voters specifically or black voters writ large, they do stupid stuff like this, where they appeal a decision to allow people to vote early. Clearly, they don't want more people involved in the process. But it just, again, it's just another one of those examples that they really ain't serious about trying to appeal to black voters, anybody who's not a white male, frankly.
No, absolutely. It's so cynical. Right. You know, if you think that Herschel Walker is the best candidate, which I don't, nobody can, I don't even think they do. And you think that he ought to appeal to the state's black voters, which he does not. We learned that in the general election in November, early November. Then, you know, you good faith would say, okay, let's give black voters a chance to come out on Saturday for Herschel Walker. But they know that's not going to happen. It didn't happen in November. It's not going to happen in December. It didn't happen over the weekend. We don't have, they don't sort people by party registration. So we really can't say for sure, what people's party registration was, but we can look at the precincts where people, where turnout was high. We know the race of voters, black people made up like 45% of those who voted on Saturday and Sunday, which is great. They usually average about 30%. So, you know, it's so transparent to people who've been watching for a long time. Yeah, we'll run this black guy. We know black voters are too smart to vote for him. So we're just still going to keep, our foot on the necks of black voters in the meantime. So, yeah. We see it. We know it.
Not that we needed any more evidence, but if you needed just needed one more thing to add to your list of why Republicans ain't really serious about black voters, here's another example, another item, I should say, to add to your list of why they really don't care about us. To quote one Kanye West from years ago, speaking of George W. Bush, he could have been speaking about the entire party. They don't care about us. And here's, again, more evidence of that. Let's talk now specifically about the race. Let me just ask this question very forthrightly and direct to you. Why is this race so close? To your point, everybody knows that Herschel Walker is not qualified to be a U.S. Senate candidate, much less to serve in the U.S. Senate. And yet this race is so close. To your mind, why?
I think there are a lot of reasons. I think, we can't talk about the runoff, although we have some good signs, as I've said. But I was there in November, and I saw some of the factors that contributed. For one thing, let's start with voter suppression. That bill, SB 202, a lot of people thought, hey, voting was easy. They actually increased the number of days for early voting. People took advantage of it. And early voting was at an all-time high, especially for black people. So that's the good news. But they really cracked down on the time you could request an absentee ballot, the time amount of time you had to send it back, as well as they shut down hundreds of so-called drop boxes that were so popular in 2020 and 2021, so that if you forgot to mail your ballot in, or if you just didn't trust the mail, you could go to a drop box. There were plenty of them. You knew where they were. Drop off your ballot. That really wasn't an option this time around. So the absentee ballot voting plummeted while early voting went up. The other thing that I would say, and I hate to be critical of people I love, but I don't think that there was sufficient investment in the ground infrastructure. A lot of the great groups that we've followed over the years and that I followed in 2020 and 21, as well as 2018 in the Stacey Abrams campaign, they complained of, donor disinvestment in their infrastructure, basically, of community outreach, neighbor to neighbor, that was so successful, especially in 2021 in the runoff, and that the big donors were giving to the big campaign organizations, including the Abrams campaign and the Warnock campaign. And, you know, they were doing their best to set up field operations. But I think that we should have learned that over the long term, a lot of this mobilization really has to be done on the ground by people with ongoing relationships to those voters who might not have the time to turn out. They might not find the reasons to turn out. You know, there are people for whom, you know, inflation really is a big deal, obviously. There are also people for whom, you know, the Biden administration hasn't done as much as it should, especially, let's say, on voting rights and other things. So, you know, the people who can really get the message to their neighbors about, hey, I hear you. I know why you're a little disillusioned. But, you know, first of all, here's what they did do. They put money in your pocket in all these ways. And here's what they stand for. Those people didn't have the money to do that kind of groundwork, or at least a lot of them didn't. So I heard complaints from people I really trust. I don't think they're just, you know, malingerers or people who like to complain. You know, they're people who really knew what they were talking about. So I'm hoping that, I know I did some reporting last week that, you know, some donors have stepped up and people are trying to reinvest in those groups. But, you know, the runoff period was only 4 weeks. So it's really hard to get the money out the door, even if you want to, and to hire staff and activate people, reactivate networks, even if you want to. So we're going to see how it goes. It sounds like it's better to me on the ground. I am feeling pretty optimistic, but right, it shouldn't be close.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a disaster as a candidate. You know, we'll see.
Yeah. First of all, I hear your point about not wanting to criticize those who you love. But as I say all the time, sometimes you do have to fight with your friends. That's just the reality in life.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to fight with your friends over issues of principle, and particularly if they are immutable principles by which you live and work. Sometimes you have to fight with your friends. So no issue there for me. Let me ask you right quick. I'm watching my clock. I got news, traffic, and sports in about 2 minutes. We'll continue on the other side. But since you mentioned the issue of voting rights and what did not get done, what has not gotten done in the U.S. Senate, and one can certainly blame Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema for this not getting done. And yet, I would argue, I would counter that argument by saying the White House, to my mind, still didn't push as hard as they should have, were not as aggressive as they should have been on this, did not consider other ways around this, did not use other issues as leverage to get Manchin and Sinema to move on this issue. I could give a critique of the White House all day long on this issue of voting rights, but my question is, what impact you think the fact that we haven't moved in the Senate to protect voting rights in the way that we should have long ago impacts where we are right now with these assaults, you know, with folks having to go to Georgia State Supreme Court to get the right for early voting? How much of not conquering this issue in the Senate you think impacts our situation presently?
Oh, I think it impacts it hugely. And, you know, not just in Georgia, but we saw, you know, we really saw the effects in Georgia. But, you know, I agree with you. I wrote at the time that they weren't doing enough. I remember that when they went to Atlanta to do a speech on voting rights, some of these groups that I'm talking about actually boycotted the speech, not out of disrespect, but out of frustration that, you know, this is too little too late. And they knew, everybody knew that not enough had been done. I don't really know. I'm not going to pretend I know the answer to Manchin or Sinema. But when they wouldn't move on the filibuster, I mean, you know, Stacey Abrams and other people propose filibuster carve out. We've got it for tax issues, right? Budget issues, have a filibuster carve out for voting rights only, you know, or add that to the two or three we have already.
Yep.
And they wouldn't go for that. So that's not getting rid of the filibuster. That's just doing the right thing. And I don't know how to conquer that.
Yep. I don't either. But I know they didn't do enough. After news, traffic, and sports, we'll continue our conversation with national affairs correspondent for The Nation and CNN political contributor Joan Walsh. We'll come back to Georgia just for one minute or two longer, because Joan wrote a piece, a provocative piece, some days ago that I want to get her to unpack for you and for me. And the piece was titled, "Can Raphael Warnock Win an Even Tougher Runoff Election? Can he win an even tougher runoff election?" Given what she said a moment ago, I wonder what she thinks. The answer to that question is, and a great deal more for Joan Walsh when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African-American books and gifts full of culture diversity. The total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.
Looking for legitimate political discourse? Without the bear spray? Tune in and speak out. KBLA Talk 1580.
Our guest is Joan Walsh, a national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine. Glad to have her on in this hour as we talk politics today in hour one. So, Joan, we were talking about this race in Georgia, this race between Warnock and Herschel Walker, where early voting was allowed to commence on Saturday, a couple of days after Thanksgiving. Before I give you a chance to answer the question that that you pose in your own article, can Raphael Warnock win an even tougher runoff election given where we sit today? It's important to recognize the following. For those who've not been following every detail of this race, here's what happened in November, as you heard Joan reference a few moments ago. Every racial demographic, except for white people and white men, voted overwhelmingly for Raphael Warnock in that Senate race, according to exit polls. Let me say that again. Every single racial demographic in the state, except for white people and white men, voted overwhelmingly for Raphael Warnock. Exit polls show that only white voters picked Herschel Walker in the race. That reality is, those facts are very telling. So, Joan, let me stand down and give you a chance to respond to whether or not, given the data I've just shared, whether or not you think Raphael Warnock can, in fact, win an even tougher runoff election.
Well, I think he can win, but to build upon, build out what you referenced, Tavis, Senator Warnock did better with every racial group, but the other racial group's share of the voting population went down. Even compared to 2018, you can't compare it to a presidential election, right? But you can compare it to 2018. So for it to go down since 2018, nobody really expected that. Mm-hmm. Black turnout went down, Latino turnout went down, Asian turnout went down, other turnout went down. You have the share of white voters then going up. So that's a real problem. And if we see that again, next week, I think Senator Warnock is in trouble. I am not sure we're going to see it next week for a few reasons. Like I said earlier, I think the infrastructure of community groups is getting built out and is very, very strong, is stronger, let's say, than it was in the general election. That's mm-hmm. important. I also think Herschel Walker is hugely unpopular, even with white Republican. I mean, with all Republicans, I shouldn't single out white people. Mm-hmm. But I single out white people, for a couple reasons. For one thing, Walker got about 200,000 fewer votes than Governor Brian Kemp, who is not my cup of tea and is, himself a great vote suppressor, but who came off as kind of a moderate. Mm-hmm. And he did really well. He did better.
He won handily.
Stacey.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won handily. Without those 200,000 votes, if Walker had gotten them, he would have beat Warnock. He would have gotten the 50%. So it's significant that he didn't get them. And I raised the question, those 200,000 who didn't turn out are unlikely to, I can't see them turning out in December. The control of the Senate is also off the table because Democrats won Pennsylvania. So it's not like Republicans have a chance to put Mitch McConnell in charge. I don't see them surging to the polls for a man they didn't like enough to vote for in November, and especially when Senate control is not online. I really can't see there being that kind of Republican enthusiasm for him. And I also think, there's probably some racism there too against Walker as a black man. That he's kind of their stereotype. Mm-hmm. But if they don't have a chance to really exercise power and domination through him, then I think a lot of them will turn their backs. I don't particularly like that. Yeah. I'm just stating it as a fact of white Georgia Republicanism. you know, that it's that's there too. So I'm feeling pretty good. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't tell people to stop working or stop giving money or, you know, stop biting their nails up until next Tuesday. But there is reason for optimism, and there's actually reason to work hard and get involved if you can.
Yes, I agree with 99% of what you just said. the only thing that concerns me, it's not even a disagreement, just a concern. I think you're right, and I've said this consistently, that I think that because there is no longer Senate control on the line, I think the turnout across the board is not going to be as high for this runoff election as it was in November. That's my sense across the board. The question, though, is who decides to stay home? If you assume the turnout goes down because Senate control is not on the line, the question is who stays home? And if the wrong people stay home, you got a race and maybe an upset.
I think, yes, that's very true. And, you know, the Warnock coalition has to be the one that tilts the balance. Mm-hmm. There has to be a reason for them to turn out. And that's the case that he's making. I think that, you know, there's also been some criticism of him both in November and less right now. But, you know, he you know, to his credit, I would say he has worked pretty well with Republicans. He brags about it a lot. He's made deals with Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, but that turned off some, you know, progressives, some black voters who feel like I don't want to see working with them, you know, under any circumstances. They're racist, and so that's a difficult balancing act because he does have a shot in swing counties. He does have a shot with independent voters, and that's important. But I truly think, you know, getting people to come out between Thanksgiving and Christmas is really a matter of motivating people who are passionate about you. Yeah. And so, you know, maybe he can do both. We'll see. It looks like he's trying. He's put a lot of money and another 300 staffers into his ground operation, and he's put them mainly, you know, in majority or, you know, heavily black counties. And neighborhoods. So, you know, that's a good sign too. He's not going for swing voters in, you know, rural counties or you know, rural white counties, excuse me, because rural black voters went for him. But you're right to raise that alarm. If the turnout does not balance that way, if there's lower turnout, but you know, it's white voters who show up, then, you know, we have Senator Herschel Walker, and I just can't even stand to say that. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
those words crossed my lips.
Yeah, that didn't sound right coming out of your mouth. So we'll move off of that. But to your point about Raphael, though, and I've known Raphael for years. We've been friends for 25 years or so. Politically, he's a moderate. I love him, but he ain't no progressive. Raphael is not a progressive. He is at best a moderate, and even then, he can't get white voters in Georgia to vote for him, not to mention, as I said the other day, he's also a preacher in the Bible Belt. You can't get a Baptist preacher on the ballot to pull white voters in the state of Georgia. A preacher, no less, who pastors the church, once pastored by the MLK. So if you can't get a black preacher in the Bible Belt who pastors the church that was once pastored by Dr. King and his father, Daddy King, then a brother ain't got a chance in the state of Georgia unless you have the makeup of Herschel Walker. But I digress on that particular point. I saw a piece you wrote the other day, and the headline sort of struck me, and I said on this program last week, I think it was, that what's fascinating for me is if Kevin McCarthy, moving now to the House of Representatives, if Kevin McCarthy ends up becoming the Speaker, I think it's the first time in history where you have two speakers from the same state back-to-back. We would go from Nancy Pelosi out of California to Kevin McCarthy out of California. So for Californians, maybe it's a good thing, I don't know. But your piece was entitled, Kevin McCarthy Will Miss Nancy Pelosi If He Survives. Kevin McCarthy will miss Nancy Pelosi if he survives. For those who were tripped up like I was by that headline, you meant by that what?
I meant that Nancy Pelosi was, you know, Joe Biden called her the most impressive, consequential speaker ever. Not woman speaker, not even of our lifetimes, not one of them, but ever. And one of the reasons was she could count votes, she could whip votes, and she understood the Republican caucus as well as her own. Not as well, I'm sure, but, you know, she knew what made them tick, and she knew on certain priorities like raising the debt ceiling and passing budgets and other things both Speaker John Boehner and Speaker Paul Ryan had to turn to Nancy Pelosi to get some of their priorities across the finish line, to make her get Democrats to vote for things, and maybe even some Democrats who didn't want to, because otherwise they would fail because they could not control their caucus. So, she came through for them many times. If Kevin McCarthy wants to accomplish anything, he will miss her ability to count votes and also, arm twist and other things to get reluctant Democrats to vote for things that she, holds her nose and wants them to vote for. So, that's what I meant by it. It's also possible Kevin McCarthy doesn't give a darn about accomplishing anything and doesn't care if we default on the debt and doesn't care if we have a funding bill. That's really possible because he's catering to the crazies in his caucus. So it just may be that he wants to see the whole thing go up in flames. And I should add, I don't mean to diminish, who I incoming minority leader Hakeem Jeffries, who is really impressive and outstanding and experienced. But nobody comes into that office having the knowledge that Nancy Pelosi has obtained in her 20 years as Democratic leader, whether as Speaker or Minority Leader in that time. So that's what I meant by that.
No, and I'm glad to see Hakeem ascend to this position as well. For those who've not been following this story, Hakeem Jeffries is a brother, a black man, out of New York, out of Brooklyn, and he is going to be the new Minority Leader for the Democrats, the first person of color to lead either party in either chamber of Congress in the history of this country. So Hakeem Jeffries will be the man leading that party. And if Democrats can take back the House, they're only, six seats down. If they can take back the House in a couple of years, he obviously would become the first person of color to be Speaker of the House of Representatives in the history of this country. So we move from the first woman Speaker to the first African-American leader of her party, that Democratic Party. So a history being made once again with Hakeem Jeffries set to assume the leadership ranks of his party as minority leader in the House. But that means that Nancy Pelosi, as Speaker of the House, and Steny Hoyer, the majority leader, and James Clyburn, the majority whip, are no longer in leadership positions. For those who were around last Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, you heard one of my last conversations before we took off for the break was with Minority Whip James Clyburn. He was our guest on this program Wednesday before I stepped out of the studio to enjoy some turkey. And so we talked to him on Wednesday, and I want to come back to that conversation with Joan in a moment because it's significant when you have the leadership that Joan just referenced. It's been around for such a long time. Pelosi steps down. Steny Hoyer steps down. James Clyburn steps down, all at the same time. So now you've got three new people leading the Democratic Party in the House. What does that mean for Democrats, what they can or will or won't get done? A great deal more to talk about with Joan Walsh when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore, specializing in African-American books and gifts full of culture diversity, the total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.
Unpack a little bit more with Tavis Smiley. The conversation continues right now.
Right now. Right now. John Walsh, how worried should Democrats be that they are losing Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker, Steny Hoyer, the Majority Leader, James Clyburn, the Majority Whip, all at the same time?
Well, I think it's an opportunity, Tavis. I can see people being worried. I'm a little worried. Let's remember all three of them are staying in the House. Mm-hmm. They'll be, quote, backbenchers, but they're not going anywhere, and they'll be around if people want to consult with them. But, first of all, Nancy Pelosi made a promise when she took over as Speaker in 2019 that she would serve two terms. I think it's good to keep promises, and I do think it's time. You know, this leadership team will make mistakes. It's not like Pelosi's didn't. They might make more mistakes, but you've got to invest in this new generation, and I think it's time, and I'm excited to see what they'll do.
Mm-hmm. How much more progressive do you think that the Democratic caucus can be? As we all know, you've got the Progressive Caucus, and they've been at odds with Nancy Pelosi on a number of things. The one most famous, of course, is AOC, but there are others, of course, that are part of that squad and beyond. So the question is whether or not you think Democratic policies will be more progressive now that Pelosi and Hoyer and Clyburn are out of the way.
Well, it's kind of a paradox, but the fact that they can't get anything done,
right?
You know, is in some ways liberates the Progressive Caucus to be more to go its own way more frequently. That might be a bad thing. It might be a good thing. I don't know. Mm. I haven't done the final count, and I'm not sure anyone has, including Pramila Jayapal, the chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. But I've heard reports that it's actually bigger. Because it was a lot of moderates in you know, purple districts who got knocked off this time, so you know, they might wind up with more clout, more numbers in the minority, and I think that, you know, that's something we haven't seen. The Progressive Caucus really grew after, you know, more, and it's been growing, but it grew after 2017, 2020, the 2018 election for sure. Which we saw the squad all elected, the squad's grown. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think they're going to have more power, and it will be interesting to see how, minority leader Jeffries and others handle that, and whether they let them run free or, you know, try to rein them in.
Yeah, we shall see. In our remaining moments with John Walsh, I want to circle back, very briefly, to her book of 2012, a New York Times bestselling book. I love this book. I remember our conversation vividly when the book came out. The book is called What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America. As I mentioned, that book came out in 2012. And I'm wondering how relevant Joan thinks what she was saying then is today in this America. We'll close with that when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580.
Conversations that matter. You're listening to Tavis Smiley on KBLA Talk 1580.
Got about 4 minutes left in this conversation, Joan Walsh, and I want to return to your book of 2012, What's the Matter with White People Finding Our Way in the Next America? As I said, I recall our conversation vividly when that book came out, again, back in 2012. Here we are now in 2022. I'm laughing already, right? How relevant is that? You could put that thing out today, and it'd be a bestseller again, given where we are. But tell me how you read then and now.
Well, yeah, I think it was prescient because I talked about how the Republicans had come to rely on, you know, basically a coalition of mainly white people, mm-hmm. that, you know, the people who identify themselves as Republican, white people made up about 90% of people who identified as Republican. And that's still true. It might be a little higher. You know, I thought Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan were bad. I was writing about it then. They campaigned with some really nasty welfare anti-welfare rhetoric. But, you know, obviously, it got worse. Donald Trump is in the book because yeah. I talk about Mitt Romney campaigning to get his endorsement. And, you know, what was Trump famous for in political terms? Being a birther, mm-hmm. you know, being a racist birther, insisting Barack Obama was not not eligible to be president. So all of that was prescient. I think the one thing that if I were writing it again, I've thought about, you know, a postscript or a follow-up. Mm-hmm. Sadly, I was too optimistic about, you know, the possibility that if Democrats really met the needs of particularly the white working class, that could make a difference. And it really didn't. You know, Barack Obama's Affordable Care Act affected more white people than anyone else. Barack Obama's bailout of the auto industry affected more white people than anything else. We've seen, you know, white people are not rewarding Joe Biden or Raphael Warnock, for that matter, for, you know, the money that came down with, you know, the COVID Relief Act, the infrastructure bill, the tangible things that Democrats have done for the white working class. The white working class either doesn't know about or doesn't care. So I think, you know, I'm more pessimistic than I was about what needs to be done to get those people to look beyond race and be part of a multiracial coalition. This debate goes on and on and on in the Democratic Party, as you know.
Yeah, you hear Joan's pessimism, this I'm a person who wrote the book back in 2012 about the next America. So my concern is where we are in this new America. Things are certainly different post-Trump than they were in 2012. In this new America, say nothing of the next America, where people of color are about to make up the majority in this country, and that's scaring the bejeezies out of a whole lot of people. I digress on that particular point. We will see where this country heads in the coming days. But it was a great book then, and again, as she said, it was prescient. And I enjoyed it then, and just thought about it last night, prepping for our conversation today about where we are in this country right about now. Joan Walsh, National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation Magazine. Joan, good to have you back on. As always, we'll do it again. Have a great rest of the day. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Tavis. I'll come back.
We'll do it again. Thank you. Hour two of Tavis Smiley, after news, traffic, and sports on KBLA Talk 1580.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore, specializing in African-American books and gifts full of culture diversity, the total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.